Is your money not sure what to do with itself right now? At Ally, they'll help it save for the future with their smart savings tools. Bucket your money for the things that matter most. Analyze your spending and save automatically. All on top of a competitive rate. For all things money, you deserve an Ally. Visit ally.com/savings for more info. Ally, do it right. Ally Bank, member FDIC.
NFL Live on the air with visuals just a short time ago. Dan Quinn and his Falcons coaching staff back at the team facility. We'll have much more on the league's reopening process and the protocols in place when the players return. A good sign of progress, though. Hello, everybody. I'm Wendy Nix. Louis Riddick is here. So, too, is Rob Ninkovich and Dan Graziano. It was just a few days ago that a video produced by an NFL employee featuring over a dozen star players was the catalyst for a chain of events that has reshaped the discussion of race in the league and maybe even the country as a whole. Commissioner Roger Goodell responded with an extraordinary video message of his own. Here's the commissioner.
It has been a difficult time for our country, in particular, Black people in our country. First, my condolences to the families of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, and all the families who have endured police brutality. We, the National Football League, condemn racism and the systematic oppression of Black people. We, the National Football League, admit we were wrong for not listening to NFL players earlier, and encourage all to speak out and peacefully protest. We, the National Football League, believe Black Lives Matter. I personally protest with you and want to be part of the much-needed change in this country. Without Black players, there would be no National Football League. And the protests around the country are emblematic of the centuries of silence, inequality, and oppression of Black players, coaches, fans, and staff. We are listening. I am listening. And I will be reaching out to players who have raised their voices and others on how we can improve and go forward for a better and more united NFL family.
President Trump responded to that message via Twitter late last night. Could it be even remotely possible that in Roger Goodell's rather interesting statement of peace and reconciliation, he was intimating that it would now be okay for players to kneel or not to stand for the national anthem, thereby disrespecting our country and our flag? Goodell, as you saw, never specifically referenced kneeling during the national anthem. But, Louis, I will start with you and your thoughts on where this story has gone in the last 72 hours.
Well, Wendy, I think you have to commend the people at the NFL League office and the people who were really the genesis behind what culminated in Roger Goodell having releasing the statement that he did. You have to commend them for the fact that, you know, they knew that something needed to be done. The people in the league office, the commissioner who himself said in that message right there, he personally knew that he was wrong and that the NFL was wrong as far as not really listening intently to what the players were protesting about and how passionate they were about it. He was wrong in the fact that he did not support them and really throw his weight behind them in the league overall, put their weight behind them as far as them peacefully protesting against social injustice and police brutality in particular. He admitted that he was wrong with that. And to see him do that is a great step along the way towards eventually enacting what we all know needs to be, and that is lasting change as far as social equality and racial equality in this country. I mean, that's just a fact. That's something you can't dispute, and people need to get behind that because, I mean, how could you not? How could you not be someone who was for that? Now, how this then branches out and really, and then kind of like umbrellas the owners as well, and what their viewpoints are going to be and how forceful they're going to be as far as standing behind the players remains to be seen. Now, there have been some teams and some owners that have issued some statements. There have been some coaches that have said that they are behind their players 100% as far as their right to protest peacefully. You know, I believe Kyle Shanahan made a statement. Sean McVay made a statement. I mean, those are people who need to be commended, but I think there still needs to be more. There still needs to be more coming from ownership that, hey, look, we are going to be behind you, and we're not going to have the same kind of reaction that we had 3 or 4 years ago, where once this whole message became politicized and became muddied and it got diverted away from what it was supposed to be, we then backed off and we didn't support you the way we want. That's what needs to be heard next. That's what should be heard next. And I think that's what we're all waiting for.
Dan, I do want to ask you about the owner's reaction to Goodell's video, or even their prior knowledge that he was releasing it.
Yeah, I asked about that on Friday night. You know, did he consult with team owners before releasing this video? And I was told, no, not specifically. I mean, the answer was Roger Goodell talks to owners every day, so it probably came up in conversation. But there was no sort of formal conference call or meeting where he said to the NFL's team owners, we're going to put this out. Would you like to have any input, et cetera? So, no, that's a message from the commissioner's office. And I think to Lewis's point, there are still some very important voices to be heard on this. You know, Jerry Jones, the Cowboys owner, was very outspoken about players who play for the Cowboys will stand for the national anthem when this was in the news 2-3 years ago. So people like that need to come out and sound different than they did the last time, much like Drew Brees sounded different on Friday than he did on Wednesday when talking about this issue.
Speaking of which, Drew Brees' apology for his comments last week also elicited a response from the president as well, and Brees addressed it to Donald Trump. Through my ongoing conversations with friends, teammates, and leaders in the black community, I realize this is not an issue about the American flag. It has never been. We can no longer use the flag to turn people away or distract them from the real issues that face our black communities. We did this back in 2017, and regretfully, I brought it back with my comments this week. We must stop talking about the flag and shift our attention to the real issues of systemic racial injustice, economic oppression, police brutality, and judicial and prison reform. We are at a critical juncture in our nation's history, if not now, then when? Meanwhile, you can count Adrian Peterson among those NFL players who do plan to kneel during the national anthem when a new season begins. Peterson believes he will be joined by a number of his NFL colleagues given the current climate, and he made those remarks to the Houston Chronicle on Friday when asked about Drew Brees' comments last week that players kneeling during the anthem were disrespecting the flag. Those were Brees' initial comments. Lewis, we're still 3 months away from games. A lot can change, but how different do you expect it will be this time around? And by that, I mean 3 years ago with Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah, I think there's a good chance that the conversation will be more about what players don't kneel instead of what players do kneel, because the climate has shifted tremendously. And it's interesting that the climate has shifted the way it has when, you know, the message still remains the same, it's just that people's viewpoint has changed, especially with the killing of George Floyd and how barbaric and just how brutal and just how wrong that entire situation was. It seems to have really flipped the entire thing on its head and now opened people's eyes in a way that Colin Kaepernick was trying to open people's eyes to police brutality 3-4 years ago. So I think, again, now it feels as though everyone has a sense of confidence that it's going to be something that people are going to support much more than people did in the past, which quite honestly is rather stunning. It's amazing that, again, something that has been happening in this country, this is something that's not new. This is not just start with, you know, just the events of a couple of weeks ago. This is something that has happened for hundreds of years, but now all of a sudden it seems as though there's this tremendous groundswell and a comfort, if you will, for people to go ahead and speak their mind and really get behind a cause that people have been trying to rally support for years and years and years, dating back to the 60s in particular, when you're talking about my lifetime. So I think, again, it's going to be more about what players don't kneel than I think what players do kneel. And I think Adrian Peterson is right now, he's preparing you for that.
And really, Lewis, just a massive shift when you think about it. In the span of about 48 to 72 hours last week, you had Drew Brees on Wednesday answering a question about potential player protests by saying, "I'll never agree with anyone disrespecting the flag." And then by Friday night, he was tweeting directly at the president of the United States to tell him the protests aren't about the flag and never were. An incredible shift in the public comments of one of the most prominent players in the league. And it shows you that in the span of the last couple of weeks, the point of view that was articulated by the players in that video, that was being articulated by Brees on Friday night after a couple days of apologizing, has sort of become the NFL's mainstream position. When you look at 2-3 years ago, it probably was the other way. Even if people understood why players were protesting, you had many, many players coming out and saying, "Well, I would never do that, even though I understand why they are." And you had players saying, you know, even more critical things than that. So the fact that there aren't any games right now, the fact that the games are 3 months away, I think that makes the situation very, very interesting, because obviously things can change over time. But it does feel like we're at a very different moment in history than we were 2-3 years ago.
Rob, you've spoken on this show actually before about the sanctuary that is an NFL locker room and people from so many different backgrounds coming together for a common goal. So in that vein, what's the most important thing that can happen in locker rooms right now when people are back together?
Everyone has to listen. They have to open their ears and listen. I had the privilege of having a discussion with one of my best friends in Roman Harper, an emotional discussion for over an hour. And he told me, "Look, Rob, everyone needs to listen. Everyone needs to love and everyone needs to support." So, and it's not just in the building. And this is one thing I want to make clear. It's not just when you're in the locker room. We have to do better. We have to listen. We have to love more. We have to support inside the building. And then when you have that team and that foundation outside of the building as well, and doing things in the community to create change that help the community progress forward. So for me, the current situation, I feel number one is listening. And I think even Trey Flowers had an Instagram post, which I watched and I thought it was very interesting. He said the same thing. Listen, open your ears and absorb it. Don't just let it go in one ear and out the other. I want everyone to listen, absorb that information, continue to progress and support. Support, support, support. I think that's what the current environment is right now in the locker room.
Lewis?
Yeah, I think, you know, what Rob's referring to right there is that, you know what, your world, the world isn't just really confined to your world. There's a world outside of the things that just directly affect you. And sometimes, you know, look, the locker room is one world, right? So in that world, more times than not, it's one that has players that come from all different socioeconomic backgrounds, all different races, all different religions. But you really, you're united, you know, to try and achieve a common goal, which is to win football games. I mean, and that's something that all of us who have played sports have all been, you know, we've all been subject to at some point in time in our life, and we understand that. It's when, you know, and as Malcolm Jenkins, when he was, you know, he had that emotional Instagram post responding to Drew Brees, was referencing, he said, "Look, once I leave here and I leave this facility and I get in my car, then what? Does all that brotherhood and all that unity and all that togetherness that you talk about in the locker rooms, that just disappear?" No, it doesn't disappear for me. It doesn't disappear for people in my community. It doesn't disappear for African Americans like myself. Our realities then change. Do you care then? Do you care once we become once we're not in the locker room and we don't have on the Saints uniform anymore? And I think that's what Rob's referring to. Listening in the locker room is one thing, because inherently I think guys do that. It's once they go their separate ways. And I think as a country, as a nation, that's what we're talking about now. You know, look outside your own little bubble. Just because it doesn't affect you doesn't mean you shouldn't have some empathy and some care for what is going on around you. But, you know, I mean, human beings, more times than not, I think in history has shown this, are really just concerned about what's good for them. And as long as it's good for me and I'm good, I don't really give a damn about what's good for everyone else or what's happening to everyone else. And I think, you know, the situation surrounding this pandemic, people being home, everybody's routine being thrown off and everyone not having a whole lot to do, has forced them to take a look at this issue in a way that it's never been looked at before. And that may be something that, some good that comes out of this time period that is unprecedented for all of us.
Lewis, thank you. Rob, Dan, thank you. Certainly not the last development in this story, and we'll continue to talk about it here and continue, of course, to listen as well.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
We continue with this, a tweet from Mike Wells, our Colts reporter. The report date for training camp for the Indianapolis Colts, tentatively in all caps, scheduled for July 28th. Of course, this is still a fluid situation, and we understand that. But, Dan, I will ask you about some of the reopening protocols now for players and the plans for teams as they begin to open up.
Yeah, Wendy, the NFL sent a memo to teams yesterday that outlined detailed procedures for opening team facilities once players can be there, presumably in training camp. I mean, it's extensive, and there's whole sections on how equipment will be cleaned, how they'll organize team employees into different tiers. Like tier one will be players and people who need to have close contact with players, like coaches and trainers, etc. Tier two is people who might be in contact with tier one employees but don't necessarily need close contact with players. You have to wear masks in the facility at all times. You're not going to be able, the cafeterias are going to have to be rearranged, so there's no buffet-style eating. There has to be 6 feet between lockers, which is going to be really crazy come training camp. Training camp, I don't know if people know this, a lot of teams add lockers to their locker room in training camp because to accommodate that 90-man off-season roster. So they're going to have to figure some things out and get creative at some of these team facilities to comply with these procedures.
Rob, look, it's just the world we're living in, but how difficult of an adjustment do you anticipate this will be for players?
Look, they're going to have to put the lockers out on the football field because 6 feet apart for 90 guys on a roster, they're not going to have space in the facility. Look, I mean, so much goes on inside that building where guys are together and close. No meetings over 20 people, has to be virtual. That's basically every team meeting or when a coach wants to speak or address to the team. So you're going to lose the ability for your head coach to speak to the whole team. I think that's difficult. No buffet style. Like, is every person going to have somebody deliver them a meal? I mean, this is just really going to change everything that happens inside the building, even taking showers. I mean, how is everybody supposed to go 6 feet apart and not go into a place where it's really confined and there isn't that much space, you know, to be 6 feet apart? So I think it's definitely going to be very challenging, especially for the medical people, you know, in the training room. You go into a team training room in a facility, there's literally tables that are pretty close and you have everything that you need in one location. All your rehab is right there. The weight room is usually right there close, attached to wherever the medical stuff is. So this is going to be very, very challenging for teams to figure out what they're going to do in training camp moving forward.
Lewis, listen, I mean, it is what it is, but it does sort of make your head spin thinking about all these adjustments. I mean, Rob's right. It changes almost everything.
Yeah, look, the football operations managers and the facilities managers right now are literally going to be working around the clock to see how to logistically help the head coach put this all together so it can run about as smoothly as it can. Look, and from a space standpoint, I mean, some teams just aren't going to, they're going to have a challenge, and they're going to have to really be creative as far as how they come up with a plan to really house 90 guys. I mean, that in and of itself, I can guarantee you there's some teams that have antiquated facilities that just won't be able to, I just don't know how they're going to be able to do it. I mean, I don't know. Like, maybe like Rob said, are they going to bring in trailers? I mean, they're going to have a series of trailers in a parking lot where they can put 5-6 guys at a time. I mean, there's just going to be some places that are better equipped than others. I know the people that I talk to from an actual, you know, execution standpoint, as far as keeping the players healthy and making sure that the place is sanitized and clean, that is a huge, huge undertaking. How you feed the players with look, buffet style, we all know that's pretty easy. You go to a buffet restaurant, it's easy for everybody to just walk up there and get your food. Feeding 90 guys during training camp, that's a massive amount of food that teams go through every single day. So how do you get that to players in a timely manner that then they can get some rest, they can get the meetings, they can get dressed during practice, get out on the practice field, field. Rob mentioned getting showered, getting back to your dorm rooms. There's just so many things that have to be figured out right now. And I don't envy the football operations people, because they right now are probably sitting there thinking, we got some work to do.
Yeah, I hear you. It was the IT people during the draft, and now the logistics guys. Man, they are earning their check, but we do appreciate it. Welcome back to NFL Live. We show you now Dan Quinn and the Falcons coaching staff back at the team facility. This is in Flowery Branch, Georgia, and it was earlier today. Quinn first returned on Friday. Others on the staff followed suit today. On Sunday, though, Quinn and GM Thomas Dimitroff led a Falcons contingent in a peaceful protest that was in Atlanta, organized by the group Buckhead for Black Lives. Quinn said, "What I've learned about leadership is that it is about other people." Here's more reaction from the league, starting with the Broncos' Von Miller.
The time is always right to do what's right. Once we have awareness, we gotta come up out of oblivion.
That's right.
We gotta always do what's right. Like I said, once we have awareness, we gotta use our moral compass to make decisions on what's right.
Yeah.
Black. White, it doesn't matter. It's 2020.
This is a message.
You know, Muhammad Ali, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Jim Brown was still fighting this fight. And it's up to us to keep it going.
On this very day, 2 years ago, I stood in front of my locker facing a crowd of reporters. And as I peacefully protested, I held a sign that said, "You aren't listening." And at that time, the country had been willfully ignoring the cries of Black communities, as it has done for decades and centuries. We've continued on our path towards normalcy with slow, small steps toward change. But I think the people have made themselves clear that right now is when we want that change. Our voices will no longer be ignored. So I say again, I hope that we have your attention.
We welcome back senior NFL writer of the undefeated Jason Reed, along with our Lewis Riddick. And Jason, you posted a column online entitled "The Power of Patrick Mahomes Saying Black Lives Matter." What is the power of Patrick Mahomes?
Well, Wendy, it's immense. When you look at Patrick Mahomes and who he is and his standing in this league, he's off to the greatest start for any quarterback in NFL history when you talk about MVP, Super Bowl, Super Bowl MVP. And you know, I went into that column thinking that I understood his impact, but I just wanted to talk to people around the league to make sure I was reading this correctly. And I got to tell you, Wendy, I came away with an understanding that I didn't even understand the full impact that he has. I talked to so many coaches and executives over the weekend who told me that his leadership, the fact that he said those words, "Black Lives Matter," the fact that he did that on that video and partnered with the other players, including Deshaun Watson, it fundamentally changed what the conversation was going to be in the corridors of power in the NFL. That Roger Goodell at that point had really no choice but to say, "Hey, we have got to look at this differently." And, you know, Wendy, a lot of people I talked to through the years about the hiring situation in the NFL and other things have always told me that Roger's on the right side of this, but there's only so much he can do. But when Patrick Mahomes did that, I had one executive say to me, the second he saw Patrick Mahomes in that video, he knew Roger was on the clock with the owners. They had to do something.
Jason, listen, it's interesting. I have to say I had the same reaction. Lewis, I know you were a big fan of Patrick Mahomes before this, but when you there was something about seeing his young face involved in that video.
Question about it, Wendy. Look, I remember a couple of years ago when Jimmy Pitaro, the head of ESPN, was talking to us all as a group, and the NFL group in particular, and was talking about the fact that the league is looking for us and looking overall for a new leadership group to really identify who the up-and-coming stars are going to be, who are going to be the people that carry this league going forward. And one of the first people that popped into my head was Pat Mahomes because of the things that the people down in Kansas City were telling me even before Patrick got on the field. From the very first day he walked into the building, what his approach was, how he wanted to be someone that people trusted, how he wanted to be someone who earned the respect of the players based off of his ability to perform. He wanted to be someone who made a positive impact on that football team because of the combination of those two things. One, I can be trusted to do the right thing. And two, I'm a damn good player and I'm going to impact you positively. And I'm going to impact this football team in this city and I'm going to impact this league. And he has made good on every single one of those things. And the fact that he is African-American and he is someone who right now lends his face to a cause overall that's bigger than just him. I mean, it's so big. I mean, really, it's what we're talking about socially. Just kind of, once again, it kind of like adds on to what his credibility factor, what his credibility quotient is right now. And it's exactly what was needed because, look, he is not only right now. I mean, the world right now, the United States right now is looking for leaders. They're looking for transcendent leaders, people who are really committed to the cause. He's committed to this from a social perspective. He's obviously committed to what he's doing from a professional perspective. And it's just a perfect, perfect unison, a perfect marriage that right now is going to take him and elevate him to places, as Jason said, maybe none of us expected.
And Jason, let me ask you this. How powerful can it be? And maybe it shouldn't matter, but the likelihood is that it does. If the brightest stars, these young, bright stars who are really the future of the NFL, how important can it be when they get involved and speak up?
Well, Wendy, as we all know, the NFL is a bottom line business. And when you look at the NFL in terms of its business structure moving forward, stars drive ticket sales, stars drive the league. So if you have the best and the brightest among them saying, hey, look, these are the issues that the owners and these are the issues that the league office, we feel they need to look at and they need to invest in, I think it makes an enormous impact. And when you look at the age of these guys, Wendy, and where they are at in their games in the league, yeah, I think moving forward that this is going to be a huge thing that we're going to be looking at and looking back on history.
McCaffrey has rushed for the most yards through three seasons in Panthers franchise history, and channeling his Bruce Lee spirit, he has proved to be quite elusive. Nearly 80% of those yards on the ground have come while rushing inside the tackles. His 2,327 rushing yards on the inside trails only Ezekiel Elliott and Todd Gurley in that span. And hard to believe the future is bright. The young man turned just 24 over the weekend. So I'll ask you this, guys, which current 24 or younger running back is best equipped to have a very long career like we've seen from, say, Adrian Peterson or Frank Gore? Rob?
I'm going Saquon Barkley. Look, the guy's built, you know, you look at just his stature and how strong he is as a runner. I think that he has the potential to play a very long time based on, look, just the way he plays, the style of play that he has. You look around the league at some of these other really good running backs, you know, they might not have the frame, they might not have the build that Barkley has. So, you know, I'm going with him. I think that he's got a bright future. I know last year he had the ankle injury, but look, it's football. Things happen. He came back from that, and I'm anticipating a very big year for him this year.
Lewis?
Yeah, you know what? I go back and forth on these on this question right here. I mean, Christian and Saquon are both spectacular. Everyone knows how I feel about Saquon Barkley. I think because he's the bigger player, I think he is the one that I would probably pick, and he's probably overall the more explosive athlete. And he's really, look, he's the guy who, despite being that size, is someone who isn't, you know, to talk about Bruce Lee, I mean, he isn't that guy. He's not the stiff tree-like figure. I mean, he's one of those guys who does have tremendous, like, physical dexterity and flexibility for a guy who's 228, 230 pounds and runs low 4.3. So as long as he can stay healthy and he doesn't suffer some kind of freak injury, I mean, you have to think that Saquon's upside is just unbelievable because of the fact that he does have those physical characteristics and he is someone who can play in both a run game and a pass game equally effectively.
All right, Dan, I'll let you have the final word here. Who you got?
Yeah, I mean, great choices. You talk about Saquon, and Lewis mentions Christian McCaffrey. I want to throw in a vote for Ezekiel Elliott, who has been super productive, has yet to miss a game due to injury, and I think is the kind of guy that just seems to be, like, you look at Adrian Peterson, Frank Gore, guys that are still doing it years and years past when people might have predicted they might be done. Zeke has this kind of all about football aspect to him when I watch him play, and I can kind of envision him still slugging it out when he's in his mid-30s. So all good choices, obviously, but that was the one that came to mind for me.
All right. Well, I tell you what, you really can't go wrong with any of those three, and the future looks bright. Also, the future may be looking a little brighter for us as well as we continue to watch NFL facilities open up around the league. We showed you Dan Quinn and the Atlanta Falcons earlier, and now we see head coach Mike Vrabel heading into work with the Tennessee Titans, mask in hand. Again, players not a few weeks away until training camp, but we're starting to see head coaches and GMs go back to the office. We won't forget, Boom, we promise. Dan, what's your favorite, who I should say, is your favorite running quarterback to watch?
Michael Vick. I mean, I just remember watching that national championship game against Florida State, and he lost, but he was the guy you couldn't take your eyes off of, and he was pretty special to watch when he was in his prime.
Lewis Riddick, who you got?
Yeah, I'm going to second Dan's choice there of Michael Vick. I got to be around him in 2010, in particular in Philadelphia, where Andy Reid took his game to a whole new level, and where he was equally as effective as a runner and a passer, and really he was at the height of his game right there, and he was something to watch, no doubt about it.
Nink, you going to make it a clean sweep?
Nope, I'm going Randall Cunningham. Quick story, I'm from Chicago. Buddy Ryan was in Chicago. Then he went to Philadelphia. My mom made me watch a lot of Eagles games in the 90s. So guess what? He's my man, Randall Cunningham. We all remember the Giants 1988 play, the iconic pass that he had against the Giants. He's a beast. 1992, comeback player of the year.
See you tomorrow.
Randall Cunningham.